Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is March 30th, 1982. The interview is taking place in the home of Oscar Turnquist in Seattle, Washington, and is being conducted by Maureen Nesvig. What is your full name, please?
Oscar Emmanuel Turnquist.
And when were you born?
27th of March, 1892.
And where were you born?
In Gersmark, Värmland, Sweden.
Okay, what was that first name again, the name of the place?
Gersmark.
And how can you spell that for us?
G-R-A-S-M-A-R-K.
Okay. what were your parents' names?
My parents? Johannes and Britta Nilsson.
Okay. Your mother's full name, her maiden name was?
Larsen.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What was your father's occupation?
Well, he was a farmer. Mm-hmm. But he was an all-around mechanic. He was doing everything. He was butcher, and he was barber, and he was carpenter. So he was doing a little of everything.
And did your mother have a special occupation, or?
No, just housewife.
How many children were there in your family?
Seven.
Hey, and can you name your brothers and sisters?
I had two brothers, Frederick and Johan, and four sisters. Hannah was the oldest, then was Marie, then was Betty, and Ida.
Do you remember your grandparents at all?
Yes, grandmother, a little bit, that's all. Okay. I was only about 3 or 4 years when she passed away.
And that was your grandmother on your father's?
On my father's, yeah.
Do you know what your grandparents' occupations were, or your grandfather's occupations had been?
Yes, farmer, that's all.
Now, you say you're from Värmland, Sweden. Can you tell me a little bit about that region and about your home?
Well, it's kind of hard to explain. That's in the south end of Gräsmark. Gräsmark is the county. And they call it Södra Västrotna. It's right at the crossroads to where you go to Karlstad and where you go to Värvika.
All right, now, from Sweden, from north to south, which part of Sweden might that be in?
That's in the middle part.
Middle part?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Värmland is the center part there, and next to the Norwegian border.
So it would be over in the western side?
Yeah.
What was your family home like? Describe the farm to me, if you can. What you remember of that?
Oh, just keep on working on the farm, do the seeding and the harvesting and so on. Raise cattle and whatnot. Yeah.
What did you have a major crop? What was the major?
That was rye and oats and potatoes and some vegetables. Different kind, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, did you live in a large or a small community? Was this a town, or were you, what?
No, it's just like out in the country.
Like out in the country.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And do you remember, what was life like for a young boy there in Värmland on the farm? Can you recall some memories of?
Well, I kept on working on the farm, like I said. Then winter time, it was to be out in the woods and do logging and so on, and hauling out of timber.
And
that kept us busy in the winter.
And what was done with that timber then?
That was fir, just like we have here. Mm-hmm. And fir and pine.
Yeah. Was that sold for lumber, or?
Yeah, it was some went for lumber and some went for a paper pulp. Okay. Yeah.
What do you remember about any special times of the year? Did you celebrate Christmas in a special way?
Oh, yeah, that had to be celebrated.
tell me about what Christmas was like there.
Oh, Christmas is, it was beautiful. A lot of preparation before you got it. and they were busy. The women, they were busy baking and cooking and getting ready for Christmas. And the men, they were getting everything else ready. Go out in the woods and find a Christmas tree, bring home, dress it up in the day before Christmas Eve. So that's how we worked it. And it was very interesting. And there were a lot of doings at the meetings and so on, different organizations. We used to take that in, of course.
You say there were organizations, so even though you were in a farm community out in the country, you had contact with other people?
Yes, we had contact with other mm-hmm. other parts. And
was there?
And we had some of those preachers come in and held meetings. So.
Mm-hmm. Did you have was a church important to your community?
Well, it was important to go to church too, of course, but there was quite a ways to the church. So
how far was
we
that?
We took in the doings at home more often. At the church, there was around 12, 15 English miles.
And now you say English miles. Yeah. What do you mean, English miles?
Well, the Swedish miles are so much longer.
Okay. Well, can you tell me what a Swedish mile is?
A Swedish mile is about between 6 and 7 English miles. Okay. So it makes it quite a bit longer.
I'm interested in knowing what your family farm area was like. Can you describe the countryside? What would it be compared to? What did it look like?
Well, it was not.
Was it forested or?
Well, we had the forest because every farmer had his own forest. They were allowed so much forest, and then they had the farms. And it was quite a flat country then, but not so very flat either. And it varied little in heights, and that's about all. And we had a river running through there, and then the lake right down below, mm-hmm. a nice lake that was about 12, 15 miles long too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pleasant region. Did you consider it was pleasant? A pleasant environment?
Oh, yes, it's a pleasant. It's a beautiful country in there.
Okay.
Like our farm, it was sloping to the east, and then right up to the west there was the woods right up above there. Yeah.
So you're growing up there as a boy on the farm. When do you begin to work on the farm? You say you're always working on the farm. What sorts of chores did you have as a child?
Oh, there was some small things we could do, like carrying wood and so on in the winter time when we needed wood. And in the summer we were always out in the field and helped along what little we could until we got bigger. And after we got up and got about 14, 15 years old, in the winter time we get out in the woods and help along. So, and in the summer, of course, work on the farm. And if the neighbors needed some help, we went and helped them. So we kept it going.
Okay.
The wages were not big, but but we got along.
Mm-hmm. What about schooling? Tell me a little bit about your schooling. Was your school close by, or how long did you go to school?
Oh, we had to walk to the school, and it was about 4 English miles. So that's quite a ways in the winter time. We walked through the snow and everything.
And so you had farm chores and school together? How did you have time for both, farming and school?
Oh, yeah. We had time for both. Of course, in the summer, there was no school. We were out in the summer, so we couldn't work around home. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how long did you go to school?
For about 8 years. Here. Mm-hmm. No, 7 years.
Until you were what, a teenager? Or what? How old would you be about when you left school? In your early teens?
Oh, more than 14.
14 or so.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're 14 years old, and then you're working on the farm and working in the woods.
And you were on your own.
And you were on your own. Did you still work for your father then?
I worked on the farm at home, helped along. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, What happened that led you to come to the United States? What happened in your life that brought you here?
Well, I was kind of looking forward to get something different. And I had my three sisters and two brothers over here. So it was kind of an inducement to come and see what was going on. Yeah.
Right. Now, your brothers and sisters had come over. Why had they left Sweden?
Well, they wanted to look for something better, too.
Something better. What?
Yeah. Well, things were kind of slow over there, and it wasn't much going on. The weathers were low and everything, so we wanted to get out and try something else.
Mm-hmm. Why America? Were many people coming here? Was it?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of people leaving for here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Had for many years and kept on then.
So as you were growing up, you knew of people who would go to America and then you would hear about that.
Yeah, that's it. And they all seemed to get along pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them came back home and visited, and they looked to be doing all right.
Okay.
So that was an inducement to go and try it. Yeah.
So you had five of your family members had come over. Were they in Seattle?
Yeah, they were all there in Seattle. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you had heard of Seattle before?
Oh, yes, huh?
Okay.
Some of them stopped back in Kansas. I had an aunt that lived in Kansas for many years, so she started to get him over here, and then she moved out here too afterwards.
Your aunt was your father's or your mother's?
That was on the father's side. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, what did your brothers have a particular occupation when they came to Seattle? Had they taken up a certain trade? Or?
They took it up when they got here, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were you sent a ticket by your brothers? Did someone send you a ticket, or how did it go for?
My younger brother, he sent the ticket.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you happen to remember how much that cost your passage over?
No, I don't remember what it cost.
So now, what year was this that you decided to leave Sweden?
Oh, that I decided about 1999, I think it was, 1998 or 1999, mm-hmm. Plenty early, and then worked on it.
You worked on it? What do you mean by that now?
Oh, kept on thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
Figuring to get on that way at certain times. Mm-hmm.
Did you have to make application? Tell me about the process. You decide you want to come. What does a young man in Sweden have to do to get over to America in those years? What steps did you take?
Them days, they were not awfully fussy. As long as you get away before you were supposed to go into military service. After you got old enough for that, then you had to make applications. But otherwise, for that time, you could just go ahead and get your credentials from the church, from the preacher. You got it. See. Get your records of everything, which you had to have to get out there.
So did you make a formal application with your government or?
No.
And
just with the church.
With the church?
Yeah. Well, they were part of the government, of course.
Uh-huh.
They had all the records of everybody that was born there and everything.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a waiting period after you made your first application first request? Was there a waiting period before you could leave?
No waiting period. No, you could take off whenever you get ready.
Did you plan on coming alone, or did you have any traveling companions?
Yeah, I had another boy. He lived in the next. We were neighbors there at home, so, and he's still here too.
What's his name?
Oscar Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's still here.
And so you and your friend Oscar Johnson made plans to come, and so when did you finally set out from your family farm?
Well, I was in the later part of September.
And the year was?
1912. Yeah.
Tell me how your journey went, how you traveled, and where you went, and which city you left from.
Oh, we got went over to next town, what's the name of Arvika, where we took the train down to Gothenburg, and then get on the boat in Gothenburg.
Do you remember which boat it was?
It was an English boat, not very pleasant. No, it was not very clean or anything like that.
What type of boat or ship was it?
Oh, it was a regular steamboat. That's what it was. Oh.
And this was at Gothenburg?
Yeah.
You got on there. Was it a large ship or?
And not so very large. Okay. I don't remember what it was. It was about 10,000-12,000 tons. That's all it was. But there was people from different countries over. They were on the same boats.
Which other countries?
Oh, from, there was from Poland and Germany and Finland and Denmark. There was all kinds of mixture.
Okay.
they come over to this country all of it.
What did your parents think? Do you remember, was there any feeling about their children coming over to this country?
They figured it was all right. That was nice. The children get out and made it for themselves. My dad, he was over here in America too, before he got married.
He had been in America?
Yeah, he was here. He was here for 5 years, back in Kansas.
And then he went back and raised his family in Sweden.
Then he got married. And
why had your father returned to Sweden, do you think?
I couldn't tell you exactly. He must have been around about 1872, 73, somewhere in there.
Why do you think he went back instead of staying here in this country?
Well, he wanted to get back and see what it looked like at home, see. But he wanted to come back here, but he never could make it again. But he was always talking about America. He wanted to get back.
But
mother, she didn't want to go.
So you were raised your whole life knowing about America and with the idea of America.
Oh yes, I knew about it through him, and he was always keeping track on what was going on over there.
With the newspapers or how?
Through the newspapers, yeah, that was the thing. There was no radio or anything like that, no.
Do you remember how you felt, Mr. Turnquist, on the day that you left the farm, set out for Gothenburg and for America?
That's hard telling. I felt kind of a little empty, of course, to get away from home. Well, I had to buckle down and make it.
You say that now. So you're in Gothenburg, and you're getting onto the big steamship. You say that wasn't too pleasant. Tell me what that was like.
Which?
On that ship now.
Oh, it wasn't like the passenger ships they had later on. There was bunks here and there, you know, piled up, and the people sick because it was a rough weather. It really was rough going over it, till we got to Liverpool. So that was not pleasant.
Yeah, it was crossing the North Sea.
The North Sea, yeah.
How long did that part of the journey take, do you remember?
That took a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then what happened in Liverpool?
Liverpool, we had to get off and wait for another boat to come over to this country. So we got in on one of the Allen Line, I think you call it. The name of the boat was Tunisian, and it landed in Quebec.
So you went through Canada?
Yeah, we landed in Canada and came in over by Chicago.
Do you know any particular reason why you went through Quebec rather than through New York or?
Well, the boats on that line, that's the only place they went.
Okay.
So that was the reason, yeah.
In Liverpool, did you, on the ship that you finally took over to Quebec, did you continue on with the people from the other countries, Germany and?
Oh yeah, there was quite a few of them on the same boat, yeah.
And many?
And others took some other boats, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What about other Swedish people too, or other Scandinavians along with you?
Oh yeah, there's some more, yeah. But of course, and Jansson and I, we stuck together more than any.
You had your companion.
Yeah.
What was it like, what were your accommodations like on the ship across the Atlantic?
Very poor, yeah.
Can you describe what it was like?
Well, it's kind of hard to describe.
Did you have your own separate stateroom, or were you in an area with lots of other people?
No, we didn't have separate. There was always quite a few to each room, see. Yeah. And the cleanliness wasn't very good. And the food was poor too. But we made it.
What was the weather like across the Atlantic?
Well, that was a little rough too, but not so very bad. The worst was there on the North Sea.
How many days did your passage take across the Atlantic?
I think it was 9 days. I'm pretty sure it was 9 days. Okay. Yep.
What did you bring anything special with you? Did you have a lot of luggage, or what type of luggage did you carry?
Oh, I had a little trunk, and of course that was shipped, so I didn't have no worry about that. Mm-hmm. Had the address on it, and I come right over here.
So you landed in Quebec, and then what happened when you got to Quebec?
Well, you got on the train, and the next stop was over in Chicago.
Now, I'm wondering how that goes. You get off a ship in Quebec, and you can speak, I assume, just Swedish. Did you speak any English then, or?
No, I didn't speak any English. Oh, there was always somebody that met up at the transit that spoke Swedish.
Somebody met you there to show you the way, or?
Well, when I got to Chicago, there was somebody there I met and took care of us. Somebody from the steamship line there. They saw to it that you got on the right train and so on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you had to change again in Chicago. Trains, is that right? You from Quebec to Chicago by train and then on to Seattle from Chicago?
Yeah.
And how long did that take across the whole country then, out to the west?
It took 4 days from Chicago. And I went 2 days, I think, from Quebec. About 6 days, 6-7 days on the train.
Did you have any problems on your train trip across the country? Any problems because of the language or money problems?
No, no problem. I met up with two fellows there in Chicago that was coming out here. They were Swedish. So we got together and got so well acquainted that everything went fine. They helped along. They had been here, so they knew the language, you know. And in Quebec, I was going to tell that my partner, Oscar Johnson, we got split up there because he didn't have a ticket through, see. So he had to buy the ticket, and some agent picked him up and got him to buy a ticket through their office. They were so quick to pick him up, and of course we didn't know. We couldn't talk. So it took him longer, it took him 2 days longer to come to Seattle.
So he came on a different train or on a different...
Yeah, he came right over Canada and through.
Okay. You said, and there were agents there trying to find the immigrants to get them to go on their particular line or train or...
Get them to come and buy tickets from their office, see. So that's what happened.
You had your ticket already all the way
I had across. The ticket, so they couldn't do anything to me. Yeah.
Did you have any impressions of what the countryside looked like going across such a...
Mark? No. It was an awful big country to go through, and we saw different parts of it over the flat country back east there, and then through the mountains coming out here. It was all kinds of variety to look at.
You'd heard about Seattle from your family. What did you expect? Did you know what kind of a place Seattle was, or what kind of place were you looking forward to arriving?
Well, that's more than I could tell you. That's more than I can tell you. Knew that it was quite a fairly big place to get to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you arrived here, you came directly into Seattle from Chicago?
Yeah, came directly here, yeah.
And then what happened?
Oh, at the railroad station, my sister Betty come and met me and took me to her home. See.
She had a home set up in Seattle?
Yeah, he was up on 23rd and Jackson Street.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then how did things go for you? What happened?
Well, I had to get around and see all the relatives first, of course. After that, I had to go to work. And got to work on the streetcar track. Stone Webster was the one that owned that owned the streetcar some days.
What was that now? That
Stone and Webster.
Owned the streetcar line in Seattle?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you get that job or get into that type of work?
Well, there was another fellow from home. He was a foreman on the section gang here. So we talked to him and he helped me to get in.
So he helped get you a job. How long was it after you arrived that you got your job?
Oh, in about a couple of weeks I had the job.
A couple of weeks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did your brothers and sisters have homes set up here already?
Oh yeah, they all had their homes, yeah.
Okay. Tell me about the Scandinavian or the Swedish community here. Did they live among other Swedish people in their neighborhoods? Was it a Swedish speaking community or?
Oh, you mean them days when
mm-hmm,
I came?
When you first came.
Oh, I guess there was. Yeah, there was a Swedish community here. They had the Swedish club, which was very small them days. It was up on 8th and Pine. And then there was other organizations like the churches. There were quite a few of them. They used the Swedish language.
Did you go to a particular church?
Well, I took in two of them. I took in the Gethsemane Lutheran Church, which I still belong to, and then the Tabernacle up on Pike Street. We used to go regularly here. Weekends, that's the place we went.
You always went to church on the weekends?
Yeah, usually on Sunday evening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What would go on Sunday evening?
They had a short sermon and so on, and then they were serving coffee, and then we met up with some other countrymen. So
it was more like a social get together, a fellowship of.
Yeah, kind of a fellowship after the service.
What about the language? Did that pose any problem for you when you first got here in Seattle, getting along?
Oh, it did for a while, of course, but I picked it up pretty quick.
Do you remember any special problems you had with the language?
No.
Did anybody, was there any prejudice against you, do you think, because of your Swedish language?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. No. No, that's, I don't think that made any difference.
Did you go to school? Some people would go to school or night school to pick up English. How did you?
No, I picked it up anyway, talking to people and reading the paper. And kept on picking it up, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How long was it before you felt at home here, do you think?
Every part?
How long was it before you felt at home here with the language and with being in America?
About a year or so. Mm-hmm. And I felt pretty well at home.
Now, you say you were staying with your sister. Did that continue, or did you move out on your own? Did you get your own place?
No, I stayed there for a while, but after that, I went out and rented my own place.
Where was that?
It was one place was down at 5th and Dunny Way, which is all scooped up now. It ain't there anymore. We had a hill there in them days. You don't remember any of that.
Is that before what they call the Denny regrade? That was before all that
before
happened?
Before done the second grading, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we were on to different places. And some boarding places and sometimes and go to the restaurant and get your meals. Used to have a house a room to sleep in.
You went to restaurants to eat your meals?
Oh, yeah.
Did you go to any particular restaurants, or were there restaurants that the other Swedish people would go to? Or?
Well, most of the time we used to go to them, but we went around to other places too. We had to try them different. Yeah.
What did you think about Seattle when you got here? Did you like it?
Well, not so well in the beginning. It's kind of rough when you come. But I got onto it, and I stuck here. Mm-hmm. I haven't found any better place to live.
So you went to work for the streetcar line. What type of work did you do?
Oh, just fixing the track, putting in new ties, lay railings, lay rails and all that stuff.
That was, yeah. Was that heavy work?
Yeah, that's nothing.
Hard work?
Yeah. It was all by hand them days. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we didn't mind that. We were used to heavy work.
Used to heavy work back on the farm?
Yeah.
So then how did things go for you? You stayed with this particular company, or did you change jobs?
Yeah, I worked on the truck there until about the following May. Then I got in with Christofferson Dairy.
Christofferson?
Christofferson.
Dairy?
Dairy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for them?
I was inside doing the cleanup, washing the bottles and when they come in and so on. So we had to stay there until the drivers were in the evening and then get everything cleaned up and ready for the next morning, see. So.
Were there a lot of other Swedish people working at the same jobs you were? Was, for example, back on the streetcar line, did a lot of
immigrants? There were a lot of different languages there.
There were?
What? Yes. Yeah, but there was quite a few Italians on those gangs. Mm-hmm. And they were from different countries. I couldn't tell you exactly where they were from, but they were a variety. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was mostly Scandinavians and Italians. That was the biggest bunch of them, yeah.
How did those two different groups get along okay?
Yeah, we get along fine. Yeah.
So you were working in the dairy, and then just tell me how things went just briefly after that. From the dairy work, what happened then?
I was at the dairy for about 4 months, I think. And then my brother, he had a job going on, a foreman on buildings. He had a job, so he talked me into coming work with him, so I did. That's when I started carpenter work.
Now what type of job did he have?
Doing carpenter work. Mm-hmm. So, kept after that, but then that kind of got unsteady too, so I didn't like it. So then, 1915, that's when they had this jitness going on in town.
What was that?
They had jitness running in town. We run and took people, you know, like almost like taxi, except we had a regular run who went. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I bought a Ford and get in on that. I worked around that for about a couple of years.
Okay, now I don't quite understand what that was. That was a...
For transporting people.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like we had a run from the post office, yeah, south on 3rd Avenue and up Jackson Street to 31st. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's some like... of them run clear out to Mount Baker Park. And in all different directions in town they run. They call it a jitney.
How do you spell that? Do you know?
J-I-T-N-E-Y, I think it is. Mm-hmm. They're very close to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was like a bus or a taxi or?
Yes, like a taxi, except it's charged, it was only a nickel, that's the reason they call it a jitney.
Okay.
Yeah, but then after a while it raised to 10 cents and so on. So that went a little better.
Mm-hmm. And what was your job? How were you, what did you have to do?
I was driving. I had my own car, see.
Oh.
Yeah.
You had bought a car?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What type of car was that?
That was a Ford. Mm-hmm. 1915 Ford.
1915 Ford?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the first one I had.
How many people could you carry in that then?
Oh boy, you're piling a lot of.
How many people might you carry at one time?
6, 7, and 8. Yeah. They said they wanted another lap, but then they didn't mind it. And so I'm just hung on one leg inside the door. Yeah.
Why would people ride on that rather than the public transportation?
It was quicker. And the streetcars were slow. See, they were up and slow them days. Mm-hmm. So people like to get through quick. And yeah.
You had bought a car. Was that something unusual after being here? How long had you been here then?
About 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Was that considered, were you doing well then if you bought your own car? Or?
Yeah, I was doing all right. Not to get rich, but I That was true. And then with the car, I made all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I made my payments and got through.
So did you meet your wife here in Seattle? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I met her. That was in 1916. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you meet her?
Oh, she was working up there at up on the hill there at 31st, 30 and Jackson. So she happened to ride with me sometimes, and then I happened to get acquainted.
She rode on in your little taxi?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, now, is your wife of Swedish background also?
Yeah, she was Swedish Finn.
Uh-huh. Was she born in this country or?
No, she was born in Finland.
In Finland?
From Swedish parents.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long, when did she come to this country?
She came then in 1916, I think it was in the early 16. No, I think it was in the fall of 15 she came. Yeah.
So she hadn't been here too long when you met?
No, mm-hmm. No.
And so then when were you married?
Oh, that was a long time after. Oh, I quit getting the run, and I went in on carpentering again. Then the war came on, so it got to be more work going on. So I worked. We were building Ericsson shipyards. I worked on it. And then I got called into the service.
Now, when you were doing the carpentry work, you were working for another company, or?
No, I was satisfied where I was, but
Who did you work for as a carpenter?
Well, that was wherever I got a job.
Oh, from different job to different job.
Them days, it was pretty hard to hang out and study because there's a lot of people waiting for a job. So, yeah.
Were you involved in, was there any union activity back in those days?
Oh, yeah. It was carpenter's union. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the war came on.
Yeah, then the so in 1917 I had to register and waiting for a call. 1918, and I think it was in June, I had a call to go and get examined, and I passed the examination right away. Yeah.
In 1918.
Yeah. So in about 30 days, I was in the service.
Had you become a citizen?
No. I was not a citizen. But I didn't put in any objections, mm-hmm. So that helped. Yeah.
What happened in the service then? Were you shipped somewhere, or?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You got called on there to Fort Lewis. We were a bunch and left for Fort Lewis there one in the summer. And I was there only 10 days. No, 2 weeks we were in Fort Lewis. There was a Camp Lewis them days. And then some of us got singled out and get on the train. And we went down to California to Camp Kearney, California, down by San Diego. So we were down there 10 days and on the way over.
On the way over where?
Over to, then we landed at Camp Mills over in New York. We were there about 4 days and then on the boat for France.
For France.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was in France in less than 2 months after I got called.
That was fast.
Oh, they were busy shipping them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were there other immigrants, people who had been in this country a short time, the same way that you had, who were drafted along with you?
No, not with the bunch I was with, no.
That would you think that was rather unusual, that you would be, that you were an immigrant that was drafted so soon?
No, there was lots of them, they tried to draft, but they objected, see, so they...
Do you mean the immigrants themselves, the people objected?
The people objected themselves.
Why would they object?
Well, they didn't want to go to war. Just like they are now, lots of them, they don't want to go to war. Most of them nowadays. Yeah. So?
But You did not object?
No, I didn't object. I thought...
Was there any particular reasoning behind your... Did you feel a part of this country already, or...?
Well, it must have been something like that, I guess. Or I wouldn't have gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know some of them never objected, and I didn't care for them. Okay. Yeah.
What was your experience in France?
Oh, I spent about 14 months in the army, most of it in France. Well, we got shipped in there to get landed in Brest. In the morning when we were landing there, the sub almost got us. They get right up in between the ships there, and they said they missed our ship by a few yards, the torpedo, yeah. So we didn't know what was going on down in the, packing our stuff and getting ready in here, but bombing like everything. So we had to get up and see what there was. So they were dropping those depth charges. But we got ashore, and then next day we got shipped out in the country. We laid out on the farm there as we training, put it on the training there. But I was only a short time, and they sent us to a place where they divided up the people and replaced, filled in the divisions that had been at the front and came back for a rest, and then they needed to fill in. So we get in on that stuff. So I got in with a bunch. I got transferred to our ship to the 81st Division. So that's where I spent the time with the 81st.
I'm just about to run out of tape on this side. I will turn it over and then we'll continue with your experience in the war in France. Mm. So what was this is interesting to speak with someone who was in that war. What was it like? Can you just give me briefly what conditions were that you saw? And
oh, the conditions were pretty rough when you were out in the country. And we laid out in the country there. We had really no service hardly at all. Of course, they shipped us some food, but there was, when we first got there, all we had was bread and bacon and some gravy for breakfast, same for lunch and same for dinner, for about 8 or 10 days. I don't think they hardly knew where we were.
How many people were in your group? You were with a whole division, or?
Well, a whole division. I got shipped over the 40th Division. But then when we got over there, they split us up and filled in the those that needed filthy.
Mm-hmm. Which part of France were you in?
We were up around Verdun. Mm-hmm. We were just ready to go in when they quit. We were just right where the big bullets were flying around. So we were had orders to go in a day or two, but then they quit.
How did you receive word of that? Tell me.
Oh, that was through our officers, of course. We got that. Everything got quiet. No shooting of any kind. That was got quiet. Yeah.
You were in the infantry.
No, I was with the machine gunners. Oh. Yeah, you got trained for that.
So you were just about to go into action, and then there was Germany surrendered. Is that?
Yeah, then Germany surrendered. Yeah.
Okay. Was that? Well, now what year was that? Was that still in 18?
It was 1918.
Okay. And.
No. 1919. That was 1919. 11th of November. Okay. No, 18. Sure. I didn't come back till 19. That's the way it was.
And you stayed on in France then with the army? Or?
Yeah, we stayed in France. We got pulled back into a place they call their Châtillon-sur-Seine. Back in there. So there we laid over the winter. And the next spring we got our division, the 81st, they got shipped back. But the unit I was with, we got transferred into with the 2nd division. And we went up into Germany for occupation force, for guarding. So we laid up there until the later part of the summer. up at a place they call Newweed, up along the Rhine.
What were your duties as an occupation force, or?
Well, we were in the repair unit. We were to see that the autos and the trucks were running. See, we repaired them. That was our duty. Yeah. I got away from the machine gunners because the fellow was going to bring us over to this division, he got lost with us. So somebody else took our place. Yeah.
So you came back, and when you came back to the United States, how did you get back to Seattle, or where were you discharged? And
oh, we got back to Camp Mills again by New York, and then we were there a couple, 3 days. Done some parading over in New York.
Parading?
Oh, yeah.
What was that like?
Hottest it could be to us. At the end, later part of August, I think it was. Later part of August, I think. And it was really hot. Marching up Fifth Avenue there, between those high buildings. We left the barracks at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we got back at 1 o'clock that night. Had been out in that hot weather. Next morning, they shipped us out all over the country. Like I and a few others were shipped out here to Camp Lewis, and others were shipped to other places. No?
Was that in New York? Was that one of the big ticker tape type parade? And was the public, were there people lining the streets and watching you and big celebration?
Yeah. And the 2nd Division had a big name, of course. They were the tops.
The one that you were in.
So they really had the parade, and they got the people really were there lined up looking for them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, the war was over, and you were back, and
then got back here to Fort Lewis. So. In a couple of days, I was out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they wanted to get rid of us as quick as they could. Yeah.
Where did you take up again in Seattle?
Well, I was going to take up carpenter work again. But then they put on a strike, a general strike, they called it. The carpenters went out, they had to get $10 a day or nothing, and they get nothing. But I was tied up, so I had nothing to do when I come back. Then there was a fellow who had a car on the jitney run. So he asked me to come and drive for him. I said, so I didn't until that strike was over.
What was the outcome of the strike for the carpenters?
Nothing. They didn't get anything. No. It was a general strike. It was a big strike, so there was nothing to do. Yeah.
How long did that last?
I don't remember how long it was. Mm-hmm. No. But I got this job of driving the car for a set of fellow, so I made all right.
And eventually went back to carpentry work then?
Yeah. When it opened up again, then I went back to carpentry. Yeah.
So have you been in carpentry then, most of your working life in Seattle? Did you stay in carpentry?
Oh, yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we got through it in 1919, yeah. And next year, my brother and I and another father, we get a contract on the building, down on Westlake. So we're on Westlake and in the 1200 block north of Westlake, it's right on the flat there. So we built that and got through with it. We got through about October. And then I got married and we took a trip home to Sweden for Christmas. Yeah. Then we stayed there for about 15 months. Come back in 1922 in the spring, in April. Then I went to work again.
Carpentry work?
Yeah, carpentry work. And I got in with a company and I stayed there. That's the only ones I worked for. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's that company?
Walter and Brady.
Walter and Brady?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What were conditions like for a carpenter in the 20s in Seattle? What was your average work day?
Oh, our wages was $4 a day. It's quite a bit different from that. Yeah. And then the next spring, I think we got raised to $4.50. And we thought that's a good raise.
Yeah. How long would you work? How long a work day? Were there set hours?
Eight hours, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we thought we'd done all right, and it was all right and nice. Everything else was cheap. Yeah.
What was your particular job as a carpenter? What did you have one specialty or?
No, I enjoyed it. I felt like that was just what I wanted to do, see, and I stuck by it.
What do you think you enjoyed about carpentry?
Oh, everything from start to finish. Yeah.
You enjoyed building?
Yeah. I worked with this Walter Amrade until 1927, 28. Yeah. And the foreman that was there, they didn't kick me off. I mean, and they done the best they could for me.
Did you leave that company then in Walter and Brady?
Yes, and I left, and my brother and I, we got two big residences to build, one in Broadmoor and one is south of Broadmoor on the in that park there. Mm-hmm. So
you built homes? You started home building?
That's what I started on. Then.
Did you have your own company?
Yes, we were together, my brother and I. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we pulled that through. And
did you form a company? Did you have a name or?
No. Yeah, we didn't form. We used to work together, and that's about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then come 1929 with the poor times. So then I had pulled up by myself, and I picked up little jobs here and there. I kept it going. I never need to go in the breadline. So.
Were times pretty tough during those years?
Oh, yeah, they were tough. Yeah. Yeah, you were lucky if you got a job and work a few days. You were lucky. Yeah. No, the breadlines, they were long. So I got through the depression that way, and then after that, there was another fellow and I got together. And we started contracting commercial work. So then we were together until after the war started. I want to get in and get some of the war work and for the government, and he was the opposite way. He didn't want to do anything for the government. So we kind of divided up. And I went my way and he went his. Yeah. But I was busy then during the war.
What types of things did you build, or what are?
Oh, warehouses, commercial stuff, and schools, mm-hmm. And I built some churches.
Can you tell me the names of some of the? Can you remember some of the schools or churches that you built here in town?
Oh, yeah.
What can you remember?
The first church I built. Well, then I was with my old partner. I was the University Baptist. But then after, when I was on my own, I built the. Woodland Park Presbyterian Church. And then I was in on schools. And
now you say that you built the churches. You were a contractor and you brought in the people and oversaw
and
the construction.
Hired the people.
Did you have a name for your business? Turnquist Contractors, or what did you call yourself?
OE Turnquist Construction Company.
OE Turnquist Construction Company?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Some other churches that you built? Can you remember some other ones?
No, that's about all the churches that I built.
What about the schools?
Schools, I was in Tulatsaram. I was over in Bremerton, I built the high school there.
The high school in Bremerton?
Yeah. And then on East Bremerton, I built the school there. That's a junior high, I think they have it now. Over in Raymond, Washington, I built a brand new school there. Then we're at Nacelle, down by Columbia River. I built one. And in West Seattle, the Fauntleroy School, I built that. And I built an addition to Elkhart School, an addition to Hudson School, and some on the High Line I built, the High Line in the south here. And there was one there on West Seattle, I can't remember the name of it. It was just down the road from when you go out to the Vashon Ferry. It's up on the flats there. Mm-hmm. And that's some Harrington of it. The Harrison School. And I can't recall all that. I built an addition to the Broadview up here.
Well, those were big jobs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was in on about 26 of them. Well, I built the Silverdale. Built that just before the war. Built it out of wood, a wood school, wooden frame. Then as soon as the war was over, then they tore it down and then they built it out of masonry. So that's the one they got there now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the new school at Tracyton, that's across the bay from Silverdale.
So you had not done any type of carpentry work or building when you came to Seattle. You started out here in the business and went up to doing contracting work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, did you have any part in the Swedish club here in Seattle? I want to talk a little bit about your activities in your Swedish community down through the years.
Oh, yeah, I had a little to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Were you a member of?
Well, when I first, after I got in there for a while, I was a trustee for about 15 years. And then I was president for 4 years. And during the time I was president, we started the idea of getting a new club, a new location. So the one that was ahead of me, president, me and we got together and got the others working too. So that was quite a bit of work. We spent a lot of weekends out looking for a place to build. So finally we got this place here on Dexter where we are now. We were out one weekend there. I wasn't with him, but then one fellow, he said, "This is the place that Burley Club is going to build." He said, "This is it." There was a sign for sale there on the lot. Next day he went and bought it from the put on the money on. And he was a good sportsman. He told his wife, "If I should pass away before the club builds, you let them have it for the same price as I paid." And one weekend he went out to play golf and he never came back. Yeah, but she was nice. She didn't like he told her. Yeah, she let us have that for the price he paid. And that place it wasn't so high. Yeah.
What year was that? Do you remember about what time that you picked that property and started to build the new club?
That was about, must have been about 59. 58 or 59, and then we settled on to go ahead there. But then we had to get together and raise money. That was the toughest part.
How did you do that?
Well, we finally decided to sell some bonds. So we figured up and we got together and figured about $300,000 for the bond we were going to sell and could build. But it was tough selling, but we sold quite a bit of it. But in order to sell them, we had to go to the SEC down in Olympia to get a permission to sell. And we had a hard time to connect with them. So finally, one day we found that the one that was running it, this security exchange, he was here in town. And me and the one that was president ahead of me, we went over to see him. And we talked to him. And he said, "How are you going to sell them?" We said we might sell to members and so on. He said, "If you sell to members, we don't have nothing to do with it. You go ahead. That let us loose." So then we were right. Yeah. So a lot of Swedish people, they bought the bond. They joined the club and then bought a few $100 for the bond thing. So we pulled through that way.
So the Swedish people supported the building of their own club.
Yeah.
And was your contracting company, did you do the building of the?
Yeah, I did it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How many members has this, is the Swedish club an important part of the Swedish community in Seattle?
Oh, yes, yeah. We used to carry around about 1,200 men on the roster, you know. And almost that many ladies in the auxiliary, mm-hmm. and they're all members of the club. And then we got the associate members. So all told, we had around about I heard the fellow said the other day, around about 7,500.
That's today?
Yeah. That was here Saturday he was talking about it. He said around about 7,500 members. That's quite a club.
And the club is maintaining members and staying strong today?
Yeah. The ones that has the voting right and that stuff, of course, here maintaining that. But then we had this associate, that's the best part of it. Yeah. They enjoy the club. And we have all that parking space so they can come and park and get in and have their eats and all.
What have been some of the major activities of the Swedish club through the years? What's the purpose of the club, what's it all about?
The purpose is to keep the Swedish people together.
Keep the Swedish people together?
That's the purpose of it, yeah. Uh-huh.
What types of activities?
That's quite a bit, quite a few things going on all the time. And a lot of other organization comes in and have their doings in there. From all kinds, but from different societies, they come in and they hear doings there all the time, yeah.
So other organizations use the Swedish country?
Other organizations, yeah. Like the Vasa Order, which is Swedish also. And then the Masonic organizations, they're in there having their doings there too. Yeah.
Do you take part in the club's activities today?
Well, I used to, but not so much now. I take it more easy.
So you've held different posts with the Swedish club. You were the president, you say,
mm-hmm.
of this club.
Yeah.
And
I was a trustee first, 15 years. And the president for 4 years. Uh-huh. And then I built the club.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you join the Swedish club soon after you got to Seattle?
No, that's quite a ways after. Yeah.
It was quite a while after.
It was 1929 when I joined the club. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How important do you think the Swedish club is for the Swedish people? And what does it do for the Swedish people? Why do so many want to belong to that? Do you think?
Well, I think it's something worthwhile to belong to and then keep up the old tradition a little. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That helps. And they're quite proud of the club. Yeah.
You
get a reputation as the best one in the country.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah.
You say you keep up with tradition. Do you have holidays? Do you have Swedish-type dinners and things like that? What about activities as far as singing and...
Well, the male chorus, and then it's a ladies' chorus also.
You have choruses. What's the name of your main male chorus here?
Svea, S-V-E-A.
Okay. Have you been active in that?
Yeah, for about 52 years.
Yeah. Are you still a member of the Svea?
Well, I am, yes, but I don't attend it so much anymore.
Uh-huh. What part do you sing?
Second tenor.
Second tenor.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, yes, I've enjoyed it for all this time.
Mm-hmm. What does the chorus do? Do they perform at different around Seattle? Do they travel and perform?
Well, they perform around Seattle a lot, and around the holidays, around Christmas time, they go out to old folks' homes and so on and sing.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, every 4 years we have a convention in different parts of the country. So. This summer now it's going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be here in July. Yeah.
Do you sing exclusively in the Swedish language?
No. We sing American too and everything. Yeah. Not everything, but we sing American and Swedish both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're getting quite a few of the younger generations of the Swedish. Yeah. They're in on the chorus, yeah.
So do you think that the Swedish club will continue down through the years?
Well,
now that
for quite a few
generation?
Years, I think it's going to continue.
Okay.
They all seem to have a good spirit about it.
Okay. What other, have you been active in other community organizations? You've been very active in the Swedish club. Do you belong to other community organizations?
Well, I belong to the Frihet Lodge, a Vasa Order, the Vasa Order of America.
Oh.
Yeah, I belong there. So I was in About 40 years I've been there.
To Vasa.
Yeah.
How is that different from the Swedish club?
That's an organization where they are more bound together with in a big bunch. Where they can meet together, like they're going to have a big convention, see. Mm-hmm. And they all, from different places, they belong to that there.
Okay. So, there's a Vasa all over the United States.
All over the United States and also in Sweden.
Oh, Vasa in Sweden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is another Swedish group. Anything else that, as far as your Swedish background, any other clubs?
No, not the Swedish club, no. Mm-hmm. I belong to other things.
What are some of your other main activities?
Oh, Masonic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you been active? Did you build any of the Masonic buildings in?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No.
Okay. You say you were a member of a active in Gethsemane Lutheran Church.
Well, I'm not active, but I've been a member there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Have you held any positions with the church?
No, I haven't. No. Okay. I haven't had time to get in there.
I better get a little background on your family before we run out of tape. You're married, and what is your wife's name, Mr. Turnquist?
Well, this is my second wife, no.
Okay.
Yeah. The first one, her name was Sophia. Mm-hmm. And maiden name was Anderson. Yeah.
She was born in Finland.
Yeah.
Sweden. Mm-hmm.
She died in 72. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how many, did you have children?
Yeah, I got one daughter.
Mm-hmm. What's her name?
Nancy. Yeah, she's married and lives right up above here.
Grandchildren?
Yeah, three of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what is your wife's name?
Jeanette.
Is she Swedish also?
No, she's Canadian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you saw her out here doing planting. Yeah.
And how long have you lived in this home?
That's 40 years.
And you built this?
This summer, yeah.
And you built this house too?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had just started when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I just started a house.
did the war affect it at all, or did you finish your house? Or?
Oh, I finished it, but it was a little hard. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get exactly what I wanted, but had to substitute some other stuff. Well, it worked.
Okay. Now, you went back to Sweden for the first time quite a number of years ago. You made a trip. Was it in 1922?
No, 1920.
1920.
Yeah.
And that was after you were married?
That's when we were married, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you'd been gone then?
Eight years.
Uh-huh. What was that first trip back like for you after being here 8 years? Do you remember?
Oh, kind of a little exciting, of course, but yeah. But I was ready to go back anytime over here. Yeah.
You stayed in Sweden for about
We stayed about 15 months, I think.
And you were ready to come back to Seattle?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, my wife got so used to it at home, over there, so she didn't care to come back. I said, we're going back. I got to try it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you feel Swedish or American or how?
No, I felt I belonged over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. I had to get back here, that's all there was to it. Yeah.
Okay. When were you naturalized? Now you were in the war. Did you get officially did you become a citizen after World War I?
Yeah, right after I got back in the fall and I got it, yeah.
What was that process like? Did you have to make application and take out papers?
Yes, I had to bring in the discharge papers and show. And get up before the judge, and that's all there was to it.
Did the judge ask you questions?
No, not much. He thought I'd done my duty. Yeah.
All right, so you did become a citizen. Mm-hmm. How many times have you been back to Sweden?
About six times, must be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What, do you visit, are you in contact with your with family members there?
Oh, yeah. Well, I only got a sister and a... And a nephew over there, that's all I got. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's some distant family, but distant relatives, as you say.
Does your sister live in Värmland still?
Mm-hmm. At the old place.
The family place?
Yeah.
And you visit that place each time you go back?
Oh, yeah.
Has it changed down through the years?
Not much. It stays about the same. Yeah. They rebuilt the house, so that looks a little better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is it still being farmed? Is there farming going on there today?
Not much. No, they don't do much farming there. I don't know what's the matter with them. Yes.
When was the last time you were in Sweden?
That was a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, my niece here and I went took a trip over. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is it that keeps taking you back to Sweden? Why do you think you return?
Well, I don't know what it is, but it likes to go and see the country again and see what it looks like, and see how to keep up. And they keep keeping up pretty well there. Well, so it's nice to go and see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is Sweden like today? How would you describe this Sweden today, the country?
Well, I would say they are pretty well at the top. As I saw in the write up here a short time ago, they were really at the top for living, no, they said. Good. You know, they're a socialist country, and they have all that, and they live high. They don't worry about tomorrow.
They don't worry about tomorrow.
No, as soon as they get old enough to 65 or 67, I guess, then they get their pension. If they need it or not, they get it.
Do you think that's a good system?
It seems to be the way they're carrying along. Mm-hmm. I know my sister there, she's getting her pensions every month. And they don't do anything. If they work, then they lose part of it. So they better not work.
Well, could you, you've, of course, you're a Swedish, from Sweden, and you've known Swedish people here in Seattle and back in Sweden. Do you think there's something to the Swedish character? Can you describe the Swedish character?
Well, I think there is some. I think they're very honest people, and that they want to do something for what they are getting. They don't try to slough. I think they're
hardworking.
Hardworking people, yeah, industrious, yeah.
And what has it meant to you to be Swedish? What does your Swedish background mean to you?
Well, I feel kind of proud of it because they're a good country, and they're taking good care of themselves and of the old people and all. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Okay. Do you still use your native language at all, Mr. Turnquist? Do you speak Swedish at all today?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I can speak it just as good now.
Do you have something you can say in Swedish? Do you have you've been in the chorus for so long, do you have a favorite song or a saying that you could just give a few lines in Swedish so we can hear you speak your native tongue?
I don't know.
Is there a favorite saying, a prayer, or something you might say?
I don't know any favorite songs, but that's quite a few favorite songs I got.
You pick out one that you like.
Yeah. Shall I talk Swedish? Yes. Jag har tillhört Svea Mjölkkåret för 52 år. Jag sjunger andra tenor. Och det är många sånger där som jag tycker om. Det är alltid trevligt att lyssna till dem. Jag har inte haft mycket tid att lyssna till dem, för jag var med och sjungit. Men härefter kommer jag att lyssna. Mm. Svenska klubben har jag tillhört också i 52 år. Så jag tycker det är trevligt att gå dit då.
What did you just talk about? What did you just say?
I was telling that I belonged to the chorus for 52 years and enjoyed the singing with them. Okay. And also the club. I enjoyed the club. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any, you have a special plaque that you showed me earlier from the King of Sweden. Can you tell me about what that plaque is about? Would you like to go get it and show it to me? Why don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can show him showing the. Okay. Can you read this to me and tell me what it says?
Well, it says, His Majesty the King, he has found it a pleasure to And then the 15th of May, 1972, to make me the night of Vasa Order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first class of Vasa Order.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So was this given to you in Sweden or in this country?
No, over in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they assisted on the now that I belong here. Medbury, I want to be
in
it. Nationalized American.
And here's your full name?
Yes.
Oscar Emanuel Turnquist.
Yeah.
And the king then, what was the king's name was Gustav?
Gustav.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. Gustav V.
And so this is the Order of the Royal Knights in Sweden, and you were knighted?
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what it is, yeah.
Well, that's quite an honor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, yeah.
Do you have other special keepsakes or mementos from your Swedish heritage that means something to you?
Oh, from the old home?
Mm-hmm. Some things from the old home?
Mm. No, not much. I got my mother and dad up on the wall there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, there is that church there. That's where I was confirmed.
That church? Yeah. What's the name of that church?
Grassmark.
Can you point to it again?
That one there.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's near your home?
Yeah.
Is it still there?
Oh, yeah, it's still there.
Is it still
there? It'll be there for many hundred years.
Okay, and that's obviously a winter
they got
scene.
Granite walls there, but that's fixing on those things. Yeah. So that'll be there for many years. Then I had a plaque there from the course.
Oh, the Svea American
Course. American Union of Swedish Singers.
Mm-hmm.
They call it for the whole country. Mm-hmm.
How are you doing? I'm fine.
You still got film?
I still have quite a bit, yeah.
You'd be running out of film prison.
Soon? I think I'm probably just about done. I think I have just what I need.
Uh-huh. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Does your daughter speak Swedish, Mr. Turner?
Yeah, a little bit. A little mm-hmm. bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has she visited Sweden too and gone back to your family home there?
Yeah, she was along in 52, I think, 54.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she knows what it is.
Okay. Do you expect to visit again? Are you planning
another
It
could
trip?
Be possible.
Mm-hmm. Planning
My
trip?
Wife wants to go this summer. So it could happen yet, I guess.
Okay.
You never know, I'll take an ocean and go and get a ticket and take off. It don't take long. You can make a visit in 2 weeks now, plenty long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I went, takes a long trip as we did 2 years ago, my niece and I. We went through half of Europe. And
So you saw other countries too?
Yeah, we saw quite a few.
Are you a member of an organization, a Vermland organization? Is there some special group?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that group?
Oh yeah, very little group there from Vermland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We meet at the club there. Fourth Wednesday every month.
At the Swedish club?
Yeah.
How many people from Vermland?
Well, we're getting kind of lower, getting less and less. I really don't know, but it must be around 55, 60, but we are not.
Uh-huh.
Are there
other clubs from other parts of Sweden that get together the same way?
No, we are about the only one.
Mm-hmm. Is Vermland a special part of Sweden then, do you think?
That's one of the states. Mm-hmm. One of the states in Sweden, that's Vermland. Yeah, it used to be some more of them, but they all faded away, so we are the only one left. And we get together, and we had a lot of fun. We
What types of things do you do when you get together?
Oh, you sit there and talk and listen to one another, have a little business meeting, and then we have the coffee served. So.
What does Vermland have a meaning in English? What does that mean?
That'd be the warm land.
Uh-huh.
Warm land.
And yeah. why does it have that name, warm land? Is it?
I think what they got it from was because in older days when the Finns moved in there, they cut down a lot of wood and burned it. So there was hot all the time. Yeah?
From burning the wood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that I'm pretty sure that's what it was from. Okay. That plague went through there, and a lot of people died, and then there's some pure Finns moved in, see. Oh. And when they come in, they cut down woods and burn, and then they planted.
Oh, to crops. They burned out the forest to make farmland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They didn't clear the stumps off. They planted them between the stumps.
Are there still stumps there?
Oh, I imagine so. Yeah. Lots of the names are still there.
I'm wondering, at the very beginning of the interview, I didn't ask you about your name, Turnquist. What about the background of your family name? Does it have a meaning?
No, not much. It was an uncle, a brother to my dad. He went over here. He was here. And he took that name. And that's where... Then my brother and sisters came over here. They took the same name, see. They took the name after him.
Was there a different name of your family in Sweden?
Nelson.
Nelson.
Johannes Nelson was dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they picked up the name Turnquist when they came to this country.
That. Yeah.
I see.
I would have liked to change them back to Nelson, but then you got to go through courts and all that stuff. So let it go. Yeah.
Why do you think you would have, if you could have changed it back easily, why would you have preferred to be Nelson?
Well, it would be easier for people can spell that easier.
Okay. So, after those immigrating to this country all those years ago, was that something you're glad that happened in your life, to come to America?
I am. I think America has the place. I enjoy it very much. I made my living here, and I think it's very good. And if it comes to buy automobiles, I'll buy an American made anytime. Or anything American.
With that, we'll close the interview and say thank you very much, Mr. Turnquist, for the interview.